Today is Women's Wednesday on Mind Talk, and I'm your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. On Women's Wednesday, we focus on all things for and about women.
And today we will be bringing back a guest you've heard from before who really had a heart-wrenching story. Adrienne Miranda rejoins us after several months. She first came into my awareness when I was told of a horrific experience that her family had sustained and learned about all the work and the energy that Adrienne was putting into writing an unbelievable wrong to the extent that it could be righted. Adrienne Miranda, welcome back to Mind Talk, and remind listeners, if you would, of what happened in your family.
Yes, thank you, Pamela, for inviting me in again. I am so very grateful, and I really do appreciate this opportunity to again explain that my son, 19 years old, Joseph Miranda, was brutally killed on July 20th, 2006, and the death occurred while he was at work, working for a landscaping company here in Baltimore County, Maryland. And when I got the news on July 20th, 2006, of course, I was shocked. I was just fell to the ground in tears and agony and pain and couldn't understand how this could happen to my son.
And at 19, there's no way to understand it.
No, there isn't. Of course, losing a child and burying your child is the worst loss. There are no words to describe it. And the agony and the pain and the loss of life, the loss of dreams and hope. And Joseph was a beautiful person inside and out. He had a hug for everyone. He was a strong Christian. And he had gotten promoted twice from when he started there. He had been there about a year. He had gotten promoted to a foreman because he loved landscaping. And he knew that he wanted to become a landscaping architect. And said, Mom, after high school graduation, he said, before I go to college, I just really want to get my hands dirty and, take this job. And he had a good resume because he had worked at other retail outlets and, landscaping.
Okay.
And, that industry. So he knew a lot about, any trees, any shrubs, any flowers. He could name the origin of each. And
wow.
He knew a lot already. He really did. So he did get this job at Outside Unlimited, and he was, like I said, promoted twice to a foreman, and he really enjoyed it, and certainly he was very artistic, he was very creative. I mean, again, he could truly turn a swampland into the most beautiful garden you ever saw. Mm-hmm. And he happened to be born on Earth Day, April 22nd, that's his birthday, and I thought, oh, God, you really knew what you were doing when Joseph was brought to me and sent from heaven, because he always, even as a little boy, he always loved, God's green earth and the little creatures and bunnies and rabbits and just, plants and shrubs. And he took an interest in it in school and was very good in science, he loved it. And he would have been very successful at landscaping architect. We know that. We do know that.
He just sounds delightful. Yeah, he sounds so dear and just so delightful.
He truly was. He truly was, Pamela. He so many, as often when a young person passes, it was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds that came to his funeral. And Joseph did have a smile and a hug for everyone. His smile truly lit up a room. He loved children. He loved the elderly. He was wise, I think, beyond his years. His heart was just full of love and giving and kindness and compassion.
Well, tell us how a 19-year-old dies. What happened?
Well, what ended up happening, and I have found out a lot, an enormous amount since, I've been fighting for justice now for 9 years. Mm. July 20th was 9 years. And when I first got the call, I knew that what the police were telling me, they didn't call for 8 hours. My son lay on the ground 4 hours underneath a bobcat in the burning hot sun. A bobcat, you know, is a piece of industrial equipment.
It's huge.
Equipment, sometimes called an earth mover. And he was crushed to death. He was on the ground already. We know that's proven, on his stomach, and backed up over by the left rear wheel of the bobcat, which weighs like 7,600 pounds of steel.
My gosh.
And his face, neck, and head were crushed. And we know that he was thrust into this oncoming bobcat by Paul Godwin, a coworker, who was still a laborer, who we believe had hate, envy against Joseph. Joseph didn't know him well. Joseph was on the commercial side. He was on the residential side. And to this day, he remains untouched. He remains untouched. He remains really unquestioned. He was never actually questioned thoroughly by police. But my son's death is confirmed a homicide by assault by the chief medical examiners in Baltimore, in Maryland.
Now, so far, you're naming real names. You've named the name of the company that your son was employed by, the name of the person who you're saying is guilty.
Which I am able to, I was told by one of the attorneys, because we had to go try the civil route since the criminal justice system would not help me at all. And my attorney at that time, he had told me, because what Paul Godwin did was, in order for him to avoid a civil case, and to be found like guilty of the wrongful death of Joseph, he offered a settlement. And I didn't want to take any settlement, because this was never about any money. It was about truth and justice for my child. And I vowed to be Joseph's voice from the beginning. You know, he is my heart. This is my heart. You know, I'm a mother. And any mother who has children know, you know, your children are your heart. And you will give your life for your children. And what he did, what he ended up doing, I guess, as a strategy with his lawyer in the civil process, was he was going to file bankruptcy. And he didn't need to file bankruptcy, but he was at the age of 20 when we finally got him into a deposition to try to get, you know, to try to get to the truth, which we did get a lot out of the deposition, a whole lot.
Okay.
But he ended up saying that he wanted to offer a settlement, or if we didn't accept the settlement, that he would file bankruptcy. And what my attorney explained to me, you know, in private, was that if he did that, he said, Adrian, the case would be what they call stayed. It could be forever before we ever get to trial. He said, I mean forever. He could keep staying it. And so it was like a, to me, like a evil, almost like an evil thing to do, like to just say, okay, I'm going to play this game and I'm going to get out of this, and I'm not going to have to go to court. And because obviously in court, he would have been found guilty of the wrongful death of Joseph. There's no question.
There's no question. Well, given that there's no question, given that you know the name of your son's employer, you have identified the name of the person who killed him.
Yes.
Why is it that, from what you're saying, justice has not occurred in this case? Why haven't there been arrests? Why hasn't there been a trial? Why hasn't there been a finding?
Good question. Very good question. And Pamela, the corruption, the deep-seated corruption and the cover-up that I have, that I know through all of my research, through all of an FBI agent, a CIA agent that are retired, you know, came to my side, because I called everybody in Maryland. No one in Maryland would help me.
Why?
And
why do you think that is?
Because the owner of this company, his name is Joseph Medved. He's the owner of this company, and he is he's wealthy. He's very, very politically powerful. And what I've found out recently is that he's connected. I'll just say that, connected.
Okay. Connected so, politically, connected...
And beyond politically.
Okay.
Beyond. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay, gotcha.
Involved in criminal misconduct himself.
Okay.
And
these are some pretty serious charges you're lodging against this man.
And I know that it's true because it's been confirmed.
Okay.
It's been confirmed by people out of the country. I'll just leave it that way.
Okay.
Okay. And there's an organization called Truth Unite that I have become a part of this past year. And they're basically, I don't really like the term, but they're what they call whistleblowers.
Okay.
And, you know, I just kind of think that has a negative connotation. I would rather say truth tellers.
Okay.
Truth tellers. These are people that seek the truth, seek justice, and reveal the truth. And people need to do that. It needs to be done. There's too many people that have hidden agendas, too many people that are self-serving, too much greed involved. It's always money. You know that. There's money always exchanged. And these prosecutors, local and state, and the new Attorney General, Brian Frosch, as well as the local Baltimore County prosecutor, Scott Schellenberger, they will do nothing. They will do nothing to make an arrest.
Okay,
they won't even question Paul Godwin. They will not even question him.
Let's back up. Brian Frosch certainly has a reputation among many people as being a really good guy, as being a true fighter for justice.
Yes. His mantra is, I will fight like hell for justice. That's his mantra.
And
when he was running.
What I believe you're saying is that the person who actually threw your son, what are you saying Paul did to your son?
Well, Joseph was just waiting his turn to use the bobcat.
Okay.
He had returned from a day's work at what's called the Windsor Mill Middle School, which is the first STEM school in the nation.
Okay.
And Outside Unlimited won the contract for the architecture on that.
Okay.
Joseph was running that job on July 20th. He got back about 3:30 in the afternoon. And his supervisor, Eric Magala, said, Joseph, we need to load 20 trees tonight for tomorrow morning because that school is going to be opening. And that it was very important, that school. It got a lot of, you know, it got a lot of recognition,
okay,
you know, in the news and all of that, you
okay
know, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. He said, there, he pointed up like on property. He said, they're just loading dirt with that bobcat. Go get that bobcat so we can load these 20 trees.
Okay.
Now, Joseph was just following the instruction of his supervisor, mm-hmm, and he said, okay. So he went up, and he flagged the driver down like you're supposed to. The bucket, we know, was already down,
okay,
because we finally got the report from the driver, finally,
okay,
after they hid it from me. But I finally got the report from the driver, from one good detective,
okay,
one good detective who got the truth. And
so the bucket was down.
The bucket was down, and Joseph, you know, flagged him down. There was also, Paul Godwin was considered what's called a spotter. You know, that somebody, like if somebody was coming back from work with the trucks coming down the road, he would stop them because the bobcat was kind of in that road,
okay,
you know, maneuvering.
Okay. So,
know,
he so was he really was a, there as a, as a protection.
Right, as a protection.
Okay.
Yes,
okay,
yes, yes. But Joe Medved later says to us he wasn't really a spotter, like as if he didn't really know what he was doing. But anyway, he was considered a spotter that
okay
day.
Okay, all right.
So, and like I say, he's Joseph's same age, 19 years old, you know, but Joseph is now a foreman. He's still a laborer.
Gotcha.
So, and Joseph, I'm sure, didn't know him well. Joseph worked on, like I said, the commercial side. He worked on the residential side,
okay,
Paul Godwin.
Okay.
But Joseph would have bid at anyone good morning. He was like that. The driver, you know, was stopped. His name is Antonio Rubio. He was Mexican descent. He was stopped. He called Joseph Jose. Joseph called him Tono. And he was stopped, and the driver leaned a bit out and Joseph leaned a bit in because it's an open cage. It's like an open, all in the front. A bobcat is completely open in the front.
Okay.
But on the sides, there are like open cages.
Okay.
And there's an obstructed rear view. That's why they have backup alarms. Okay?
Gotcha.
Now, so Joseph leaned in, the Antonio leaned out, and Joseph said, "Tono, need to use bobcat, load trees, load trees." And Tono said, "Yes," like yes. Said, "Jose, can we just load one more bucket, one more dirt?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Jose agreed. Jose said, "Sure." And Jose agreed. And he said, he watched my son, Joseph, Jose, walk past the left side of the cage to wait to the area where Paul Godwin was standing. That's what the driver says. And that's true. We know that Paul Godwin was standing there.
Okay.
He was a spotter.
Adrian, so, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will continue with the rest of this part of what happened. So don't go away, folks. We'll be right back. This is Pamela Brewer, and you're listening to Mind Talk. Adrian, all right, Joseph was walking towards the back of the bobcat, waiting for the driver to
finish the one. Yes,
the one
to complete
load.
The one,
okay.
Where they, you know, he drives forward, you know, he picks up dirt, he then turns, and then he goes towards, he goes sort of the other direction, and then he dumps the dirt in the dump truck, then backs up, then moves forward again. It's a repeated motion, a repeated maneuvering.
Okay.
And they had already done like eight buckets. Paul Godwin knew the repeated motion of that bobcat.
Okay.
My son didn't, you know, he just got there. But you know, he waited. He said, okay, sure, you know, and he waited. He was even drinking a soda. I know Joseph was drinking a Dr. Pepper. I know it because he had said to me earlier in the year, he said, "Mom," he said, "you ever try Dr. Pepper?" And I said, "Oh," I said, "maybe years ago, hon." I said, "But, you know, mommy's a Pepsi girl. You know that." At that time, I don't drink sodas now, but at that time I went from Coke to Pepsi. But anyway, I remember distinctly him saying, "I really like Dr. Pepper. Like, I started drinking it and I really like it." I said, "Well, good."
Okay.
That's good.
So he was
but
having
underneath,
his soda.
Underneath the front left wheel, which the forensic people never gathered evidence, any kind of evidence at all. They should have taken Joseph's shirt. They should have taken the soda bottle. They should have taken
Joseph's
shirt could have had, you know, and probably did have Paul Godwin's DNA on it. The crushed plastic bottle in front of the left front tire was a plastic bottle of Dr. Pepper.
How did your son go from walking
standing.
Away and from standing mm-hmm. to being crushed under
right.
7,500?
Right.
How did that happen?
Well, Joseph was, and it was like a dirt road. It was a dirt road that they were working on, very not far from the office.
Okay.
Maybe about, I don't know, 50 feet from the office. And Joe Medved has a great big stone mansion that sits way up on a hill. And Joseph was killed on the dirt road behind, like, where he lives. And it was like an access road. People could come, you know, people coming back from work or anybody even coming to visit him in his office for a meeting, whatever.
Okay.
There were two entries. There was an entry from Reisterstown Road, and there was an entry from what's called Bortner and St. Paul Road. So there were two entries.
And how did your son get under the wheel?
Well, what happened was Joseph, we know, was just waiting. It was the hottest day of the year. I'm sure he was hot. You know, he had worked all day at that school, but he was waiting. And Joseph had his back to Paul Godwin. He was just waiting, had his back to Paul Godwin. And I'm sure was drinking a soda, just waiting. And the driver says that in his report, he watched Joseph go past the left cage, you know, the left side of the cage, to the area where Paul Godwin was standing. So he then says, I continue to back up about like 4 or 5 feet, you know, to straighten out the bobcat, because
okay.
he sort of straightens it out to then go forward to pick up another bucket of dirt. Okay, so he had gone backward, you know, in reverse for 4 to 5 feet, and then stopped. And before he went to go forward, Paul Godwin came to the left front of the bobcat with his hands, putting his hands across his neck and looking at the driver like, to stop, stop. You understand? Stop.
Okay.
So Antonio, like, he doesn't move, and he looks to the left, and he sees a pool of blood, a pool of blood. And he looks down and realizes that my son is crushed to death. I mean, his head excruciatingly crushed. And he doesn't even turn off the bobcat. He jumps out screaming, pounding on his chest, crying, begging for a priest. That's in the report. And Paul Godwin goes into the office and says, Joe Miranda's dead.
Now, what did Paul Godwin have to do, if anything, with Joe Miranda's death?
Well, he's the one that pushed Joseph, that threw him from behind. He's the only one that was there.
Huh.
And he threw Joseph, propelled him so hard into that bobcat, and knew when to do it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Joseph was already prone, flat on the ground, found on his stomach, with the right side of his cheek next to the ground, you know, like next to the ground. And the bobcat, the rear left tire, the big tire, went over Joseph's head, left side of his face and neck, and landed underneath his left armpit.
So what
and
you're
my
saying...
son's legs are sticking completely out the back of the bobcat. And Joseph's face, head and neck is crushed to death.
So what you're saying is that Joseph was standing behind the bobcat, drinking his soda.
Right, just waiting.
Paul
right.
threw him under the bobcat.
He threw him, like, into it.
Why
like,
would
people
he do
have
that?
Said, Adrian, it's no different than throwing someone in front of a moving train.
Why would he
it's
do that?
It's no different. Well, we believe he did it because jealousy, hatred. Joseph was a foreman. Joseph was well-liked. Joseph was very popular at work. He was still a laborer. Joseph got a lot of attention. You know, we think it was a hate crime, jealousy and hate.
Were there any racial differences between Paul and Joseph?
Any kind of what differences?
Any racial differences?
No. No racial differences.
Okay.
No. No. And the only thing that what we think additionally since... more information that I've learned, Pamela, since we last spoke, is I think I explained to you at that time that Joseph came home from work about 2 months before all of this happened, like in May. And he came home, you know, he went out, took a shower. I was making dinner. He sat down in the kitchen. He sort of rested his forehead on his elbow, and he just sort of like sighed a little bit. He looked very distressed. And I said, Joe, what's wrong? What's wrong, sweetheart? And he said nothing. You know, nothing. And, you know your children.
Right.
You know, and I knew something was bothering him.
Yeah, nothing
something
is often
really,
something.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I said, you know, and I was at the sink, and I said, Joseph, I said, you know, because his head was, like, you know, rested in his arm, and I could tell he was very distressed. And so I sat down catty-corner to him at the table, and I said, Joseph, look at me. Look at Mom. I said, what is the matter, sweetheart? What's bothering you? And he just like, he said, Mom, you know, he just like he hesitated. He didn't really want to say anything to me. And I said, tell me, Joseph. And he looked me like straight in the eyes and he said, Mom, Outside Unlimited does bad things. I said, they do bad things. What do you mean?
Right.
What do you mean bad things? And then he just put his head back down. You know, and so I went over to the portable phone and I brought it over to Joseph and I said, Joseph, if you're telling me Outside Unlimited does bad things, and I know Joseph. Joseph wouldn't be saying that if it was something, just a light, something like, you know, that was, you know, he was talking about something
bad.
Really bad.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I said, Joseph, if you can't tell Mom what you're referring to, and you're saying there's these bad things happening at Outside Unlimited, you need to call and resign. You need to call and resign right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a mother does. That's what you want, you know. But Joseph was 19 years old. I mean, I'm just saying, I can't, when your child is 18, you can't force them. You can't,
right.
You can't make them, you
but
know.
Let me ask you this. If Joseph was telling you that they were doing bad things and he was clearly distraught, do you have any information that Joseph actually confronted anybody at his place of business about these bad things? Did they know that he knew?
I believe, Pamela, that they did.
Okay.
I believe, and many people have said to me after reading my book, after knowing what is going on with everything now, that they believe Joseph found out something, or Joseph knew something, or they asked Joseph to do something and he didn't want to, and that may have been very much a part of why he was murdered. His murder may have been ordered.
May have been ordered.
Ordered, so to speak.
That's
may have been
pretty big...
premeditated. I'll use that word, premeditated.
Either way, that's a pretty big accusation.
Yes, it is. And we allege, by all the information I have, by other information that I was able to get about the owner of this company from a former CIA agent, that they strongly believe that, strongly. That Joseph found out something or knew something, and that man was going to protect his business and his 24 other businesses that he has, come hell or high water.
24 business. Okay, that's a lot.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you tried to then pursue this, and it sounds like you met several closed doors.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
What's happening
that
today?
And that day, Joseph just... He basically, that afternoon, that evening, he put the phone back on the cradle. He turned me, because I was back at the kitchen getting our plates, and he kissed me on the forehead like he always did, and he hugged me, and he said, Mom, don't worry. Don't worry. I'm only going to get another paycheck or two, and I'm out of there. I'm going to be fine. I don't want you to worry. And he believed he was going to be okay. He didn't think somebody was going to kill him. Do you understand what I'm saying? Or hurt him?
Absolutely.
He was just going to get out of there, go back to school, become a landscaping architect, you know. But they killed him. July 20th, he was murdered. My son was murdered. There's no question. There's no question. Even in the deposition, in one of the police reports, it says pushing, that there was pushing. And when my attorney has the police reports right in front of him, and Paul Godwin didn't know what we had, I had to fight to get all the reports because they hid reports from me. I had to fight and send my Freedom of Information Act rights all into Central Records. The lawyer in the background was screaming. They were saying this one report didn't exist, and I knew that good report did exist because the good detective went to the medical examiner and said, this young man's death is no accident. It is foul play. You can see what happened here. I went and interviewed the driver myself after this no good Kitzinger, who they put on, who was like a rookie detective, and the Maryland State Police put him on the case, and he lied to us. He withheld police reports. He like tormented us. All of them did, and he is now the chief of internal affairs.
Adrian,
can you believe that? He is now the chief of internal affairs.
That's astounding. Adrian, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll pick up right here. So don't go away.
Thank you.
Adrian Miranda, mother of Joseph Miranda, who Adrian, by your understanding, was killed at the age of 19 on July 20th, 2006. You said that they denied you access to reports and that you had to go through extreme measures to get the reports. Who is the they you're speaking of who were denying you access to information?
The Maryland State Police. The Maryland State Police withheld reports from me. They also, when Joseph was killed, it was a criminal investigation. I do know that.
There was a criminal investigation.
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yes, it was a criminal investigation. I was told that by Lieutenant Dean Richardson, who I believe now is in Canada. He left after the closing meeting of my son's death on July 11th, 2007, almost a year to the day. When I thought they were going to give us a chance to have our questions answered, I had 41 questions they asked me to put in writing, and they really did nothing they said made any sense. They didn't answer our questions. The attorney, the state's attorney, his name is Jerry Barnes, who actually was in Carroll County, was the one who was at this meeting, and they gave him the jurisdiction to oversee the criminal investigation, as well as these Maryland State Police detectives. And he should have never had it. My son wasn't even killed in Carroll County. He was killed in Baltimore County. Okay. And I had a survey done, and all of that was confirmed. But when the Maryland State Police got there, along with the Baltimore County Police, the Baltimore County Police were told to go away because Joe Medved, the owner, said, "This is Carroll County. I knew my property, and this is Carroll County." The Maryland State Police did not even do a GPS. They didn't even do a GPS, which is like, that's basic. That's like basic 101, you know, to find out what jurisdiction it is.
And
they
just listened
to the owner. They just listened to the owner.
Why do you believe that the owner wanted to represent that the death happened?
Carroll County?
Yeah.
Because what I've heard again is he's hated in Carroll County, and he has been known to say, "I own Carroll County. I own Carroll County." And see, in Carroll County, there's 23 jurisdictions in Maryland. They all have police districts except for Carroll County. Carroll County does not have a Carroll County police.
Oh.
The Maryland State Police are the police who respond to anything in Carroll County. It's the Maryland State Police. And I guarantee you he's got them in his pocket, in every way you can imagine. And Jerry Barnes, who was the one who should have never been on the case at all. He threatened me at this meeting. I better not dare go to the media. I better not dare go to the media. He asked before we started, are we being taped? And this past November, he shot himself in the head. He killed himself.
Oh my.
Which, yeah, I know. It's like, it's a sad situation, and they had it on the news one time and said they would give follow up with more information. You never heard about it again. But he killed himself, shot himself right in the head. He was 61 years old, and who knows why? I don't know why.
Okay.
But obviously something went awry. And then also the man who introduced himself at that meeting, who said he was Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Coppinger, was not Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Coppinger. That's fraud. He lied about his identity. I just found this out because I was able to find pictures of Thomas Coppinger and pictures of Ron Collison. He was Ron Collison, who was a major at the time. Ron Collison now is the bureau chief for the Maryland State Police, who identified himself as Thomas Coppinger at that meeting. That's fraud. That's fraud, Pamela. That's fraud.
There's so much stuff.
Absolutely.
You're
layers.
Talking about.
Layers and layers.
And so where are we today? I mean, one person is now in Canada. One person killed himself. Your son is clearly gone. Godwin is not being prosecuted. What's happening nowadays?
Well, what's happening now is I continue. I wrote my book, The Scent of My Son and God We Trust. You know my book, right?
Yes, I do.
Yes, and everything in the book is true. It's factual. And, you know, like, again, I'm learning more. I find out this Ron Collison, you know, who's bureau chief now, identified himself as Thomas Coppinger, who wasn't Thomas Coppinger at all. Thomas Coppinger was a lieutenant colonel. Then he was demoted to major. Then he got back promoted, and then they allowed him to retire, so he would get his retirement. Somebody told me he's now at Maryland Live Casino. I don't know. I don't know what he does, and okay. I really don't care.
Okay.
But they're all wrongdoers. These police that are involved in my son's death are wrongdoers. They have committed perjury. They have committed fraud. They have committed obstruction of justice, and somebody needs to interrogate them. And when I tried, and like I said, the medical examiners in our deposition, my lawyer, Keith Trufer, a wonderful, wonderful man, had the police reports, and it does say pushing. There was pushing. So he asked Paul Godwin, tell me about this pushing with Joe on the day Joseph was killed. Tell me about this pushing. He says, oh, there wasn't any pushing. There wasn't any pushing. And he says, Mr. Godwin, it's right here in the police report. And he shows him. Pushing. There's pushing.
Mm-hmm.
He says, oh, well, he was real cocky, had no remorse whatsoever. He said, oh, the police got it wrong. They got it wrong. He said, there wasn't pushing. I gave Joe the 1-2. And he puts his fist up, the 1-2. See, he's saying physical assault, physical attack.
Isn't that,
you know,
pushing? Isn't the 1-2 pushing?
Yeah, the 1-2 is more than pushing. It's like a punch, like
right.
you're in a you know, like the 1-2, like somebody
yeah.
that's having a what do you call it?
Like
you
a
know,
fight.
Like a fight, you know. He says, I gave Joe the 1-2. He said, well, what did Joseph do? He said, nothing. Yeah, he did nothing because he was dead on the ground after the 1-2.
Good heavens.
And then later, when my attorney asked him again, he says, Mr. Godwin, I want to know more about this 1-2. And he says to my attorney, he's real like cocky and arrogant, you know, 20 years old. He says, you know, I don't really like what you're insinuating when you ask me about the 1-2. He says, you know, I don't really like that. And my attorney says, Mr. Godwin, I'm not insinuating anything. I am asking you questions, and that is my job, to ask you questions,
mm-hmm.
and it is your job to answer them to the best of your knowledge. He says, well, it wasn't really extreme or violent, just a little bit. Just a little bit violent,
right?
Enough to take the very life of my son. The assault is there. It's right there, Pamela. Do you hear what I'm saying?
I do.
It's right there. Paul Godwin didn't have a mark on him. Joseph wasn't fighting anybody. Joseph was just waiting for the bobcat. That's all he was doing.
And I think your son's cell phone was recovered at some point?
Yes, yes. I have my son's cell phone, and I was trying to explain to Elizabeth Embry, the new criminal prosecutor for Brian Frosch, and she would not listen to me. She said, you know, I don't want to hear anything you have to say. Well, no one's looking into this case again. And I said, Elizabeth, I have new information. I said, please. Please, I said, it's all there, all the facts, science, the evidence. I said that my son's death is confirmed homicide by assault. Doesn't that mean anything by the medical examiner? She said, well, not really. I said, what do you mean not really? I said, homicide by assault is a crime. And Scott Schellenberger is saying it's not a crime. She said, well, it isn't. I said, it isn't? How is homicide by assault not a crime? An assault alone is a crime, yet alone to the point of death. Like, you're not making any sense.
And what did she say to you?
She just said, we're not doing anything. We're just not, period. We're not. And she said, you know, there's not enough here. There's not enough evidence. I said, there's a mountain of evidence, Just, you know, why won't anybody even question Paul Godwin? Why won't you just go and question him? Why? We will not. I said, he doesn't have an attorney now. In the beginning, Joe Medved hired for him a very high-profile criminal defense attorney, a criminal defense attorney named Richard Irwin in Towson, and he hired him. Why did he hire him? We hadn't done anything yet, as far as, you know, except we knew something's wrong, something's very wrong.
Uh-huh.
But why hire a criminal defense attorney for Paul Godwin? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And and the Maryland State and the Baltimore County Police, because it was Baltimore County's, and Scott Schellenberger had to take it because it was his jurisdiction. They said, "Oh, we'll do a complete independent investigation from the Maryland State Police and all that." They did nothing. They didn't even give my son's case a case number in Baltimore County. Not even a case number. And they didn't follow up on people I told them to interview, people I told them to talk to. They didn't. They did nothing. They did nothing. And Scott Schellenberger says it's in the one newspaper article from the Baltimore Sun on October 15, 2011, written by Peter Herman, that he says that the coroners say the death is homicide by assault, and he just says it doesn't rise to the level of crime. So the reporter says, why? Are you saying homicide by assault doesn't rise to the level of a crime? He says, because Joseph Miranda, you know, ran on top, stood on top of a left wheel and fell through it while it was going forward. He repeats the lie, the hideous, ridiculous, impossible lie that Godwin made up. It's impossible what Godwin says. My
Wait
son
a minute.
Had no
that,
broken bones below
that,
his neck.
That
and
your
Schellenberger
son...
is...
The story, I'm trying to make sense of this. Godwin said that your son was standing on top of the wheel?
Yeah, he said that's what happened. He said there's only backup tread marks. And he says what his version is that Joe, when the Bobcat was moving forward, ran because I don't know what he thought he was going to do. What, sit in the driver's lap? There's only like the seat sits low. There's only right. like one seat in the thing. But he says he ran forward and jumped up on top of the left tire to try to take control of the Bobcat and fell through. And the dimensions, you know, the two left tires is only 16 inches between the two left tires. I measured it, and the underground carriage is 9 inches off the ground. He says Joseph was 5'11", that he jumped up and fell through and fell underneath, and that's why, you know, but and that's how Joseph was killed. It's impossible. You couldn't do it if you were a contortionist midget. You couldn't do it. Joseph had no broken bones below his neck.
Mm-hmm.
And the driver never says none of that ever happened. None of that ever happened. He would have seen Joe on the left tire trying to drive. None of that ever happened.
That's
Paul
what
Godwin
the driver said.
He is a liar, and he's just trying to cover his own backside, and he killed my son. There is no question. He killed my son, and he needs to be interrogated. He needs to be questioned, and I even asked Baltimore County when he no longer had, I knew he no longer had representation by that lawyer because they figured they didn't need him anymore, and I asked the Baltimore County detectives, why don't you go and question Paul Godwin now? They wouldn't even polygraph him at the Maryland State Police. A polygraph was ordered, but they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't polygraph.
What do you mean it was ordered and they wouldn't do it?
Yes, I know it was ordered. I know the polygraph was ordered because I finally got all the reports from Exercising My Freedom of Information Act. Right.
Who ordered the polygraph?
Who ordered the polygraph was Detective Richard Bechtel, who was the one good detective. The one good detective. And the polygrapher who I talked to, I ended up talking to him, and I asked him, I said, why did you not polygraph Paul Godwin in the death of my son?
Yeah.
And he said, Miss Miranda, he was very nice, but he said, I'm very sorry. He said, I wondered the same thing. He said, but I was told not to. I said, told by who?
Mm-hmm.
He said, by Major Collison, this Ron Collison, Coppinger, and Elliot. And Elliot, Detective Elliot, those three names. He was told not to. So he had to go by what they told him.
Adrian.
The Maryland State Police, I'm telling you, they are corrupt, Pamela. They are more than corrupt. You know, I was raised to respect police, you know, that they protect and serve us. But there are so many that are corrupt. The laws of immunity in Maryland need to be changed. You know, it's like a green light to give the police and these people that they can go and do anything they please. Anything they choose, anything they please.
Adrian,
and the law has to be changed. Look at Freddie Gray.
Adrian,
look at the unrest.
Let me interrupt you. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to pick up right here with your concerns about the immunity laws in Maryland.
Thank you, folks.
We will be right back. This is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. Adrienne Miranda, you're saying that the immunity laws in Maryland must be changed. Why do you say that, and how would you like them changed?
Absolutely, they have to be changed, because I have lived through this crisis and this tragedy, and I have seen and experienced what the police are allowed to get away with, what these prosecutors are allowed to get away with, and it is not for the people. It is against the people. It doesn't even give us a remote possibility to obtain justice. Because the police, they basically can lie, they can commit perjury, and they can commit obstruction of justice, police misconduct, and they can get away with it. They can get away with it. And that's no one is above the law, Pamela. No one is above the law. And the laws in Maryland are antiquated, and they need to be changed. And the only reason, like I say, I bring up Freddie Gray, everyone knows nationally about the unrest in Baltimore City. And, you know, my heart goes out to Freddie Gray and his family. I understand the pain, the agony. I watched, as everyone else did, and in my opinion, yes, they killed Freddie Gray. I watched them as that young man lay on his stomach, and the police pulled back his hands and pulled up his feet, like hands almost towards his feet, and stood on his back spine, stood and pressed on his spine, and I believe broke his back or his spine or something. And when they got him into the paddy wagon, you can see he wasn't standing on his own. Right. They were holding him up by his jeans. He couldn't even stand. And then they threw him in the paddy wagon. And yes, they need to be charged and held responsible for that young man's death. And what I'm saying is, you know, okay, they're being charged. Okay, so there's physical abuse there. There's physical misconduct. So I'm saying, with my case, okay, the police didn't physically kill my son, but they covered up. They covered up the death of my son. They hid police reports. They committed perjury, obstruction of justice, fraud. Like, why is all that okay? And they can get away with that. So what, it has to be a physical, you know, charge? Like, in other words, those kinds of other criminal misconduct, you know, and perjury and obstruction of justice and aiding and abetting and fraud. Why aren't they being charged with that? Why? There shouldn't be a difference. Crime is crime. You know what I mean? A criminal misconduct. You know, there are several. Paul Godwin could have been charged with, you can be charged with several things. He could be charged with murder. He could be charged with manslaughter. He could be charged with reckless endangerment. He could be charged with assault. You know what I'm saying? Pick one. If not all of them, you know, let a jury decide. Take it to a court of law, put it on trial, present the facts, and let a jury decide. But they will not. They will not. And there's a division in Maryland called the Division of Crime Control and Prevention. And like about 2 years after Joseph was killed, and I'm still trying to get the truth and all of this, and they're just beating me down, you know, basically wanting me to go away. Like, you know, she's just some little mom in Maryland. Nobody's going to pay any attention to her.
Right.
Well, I got news for you. Don't mess with anybody's mother. I'm just saying, you know, a mother can be a powerful voice. Anyone can be a powerful voice and make a difference. But you have to stand up. You have to stay convicted. And you have to never give up, Pamela.
What is this Division of Crime Control and Prevention? What do they do?
Well, what they are supposed to do is that if there is any kind of misconduct, say by law enforcement and, you know, prosecutors and that kind of thing, showing bias or prejudice or not doing their jobs or purposely, you know, covering up kind of thing, they can be interrogated. They can be interrogated, questioned, you know, by the authorities, by the special prosecutor. But the key is, and I talked to this lady, Shirley Haas, and submitted my forms and everything. She wrote me back a letter and said, Adrienne, yes, indeed, everything that you are stating here is very serious, a very serious matter. But what you must understand in order for us to proceed and interrogate and question these people, first, a crime has to be committed. Any crime, doesn't matter what the crime is, but it has to be a crime. They will not call the murder of my son, homicide by assault, a crime. They say it's not a crime.
Are
you making the connection, Pamela?
That's so stunning.
It is. It's true, though. I'm telling you factual truth.
Yeah.
It is outrageous. It is outrageous. It is appalling. It is detestable. And the immunity laws in Maryland have to change.
Adrian,
these police have to be held accountable. Paul Godwin has to be held accountable for the murder of my son. And all of this corruption, it needs to stop. And it's not going to if somebody doesn't, you know, if the people don't come together and
unite
and stand up for justice and demand it.
Adrian,
and
you
these
said
laws, I want to change the laws. I want to try to get some bills passed.
Yeah.
I already got two House bills passed, you know, and I'm looking for people to help me, to please help me. No one in the state of Maryland, no media, not the Baltimore Sun will help me. They can bring out the updates, you know, homicide by assault. They're saying it's not a crime. You know, my book, you know, I've written my book about it. I'm now a part of the National Association of Professional Women, Maryland Association of Authors. I have my own website. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm doing everything I possibly can. You are now the fifth person that has interviewed me. And again, I'm so grateful to you, Pamela. I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. But I've been on Cancel the Cabal. I've been on, because it's alternative internet radio. But Cancel the Cabal was a wonderful interview also with Stephen Roberts.
Is all of this information on your website?
It's all on my website.
Okay,
I have your link from our first interview.
Okay.
And the link to Cancel the Cabal. You can link right to it from my website.
Let me ask you this, Adrian. You said that you joined Truth Unite. Are they helping you in your fight?
Basically, yes.
Okay.
Basically, yes. That's all I can say at this point. They are, and another fellow, Jeff Sisk, wants to do a documentary. He would like to do like a two-hour documentary on everything. I've tried calling Dateline. I've tried calling 48 Hours, CNN. You know, they really don't get back to me. Lisa Sylvester, first, she was a reporter with CNN in the beginning, and a lot of the people at CNN listened to me. They helped me. They were wonderful. So was MSNBC. But now, like, it's like everybody's disappeared. And even, you know, the I team here, WBAL, they will do nothing. They will do nothing. The Baltimore Sun won't do anything. I even asked, could I pay for a classified ad to just put my book, you know, the name of my book, because some local papers will put, like, you know, people, a local author in Maryland, they want to support their local authors and all that. They will not even get back to me. They will not even get back to me.
Well, Adrian, I want you to tell the audience your website and your Twitter handle and give out the contact information you would like to share.
Yes, my website is www.thescentofmyson.com, all together, no spaces, www.thescentofmyson.com.
Okay.
And if you go to that, you'll see pretty much everything. I'm not really sure if I had included about Ron Carlson identifying himself as Thomas Coppinger, but we know that for fact.
Okay.
So that's fraud. And it's pretty much up to date on there. And also, my Twitter handle is basically aiming up, because I'm aiming up to God. And you know, I know God. With God, all things are possible.
Then, all right, spell your Twitter handle.
It's AIMINUP, aiming up.
Okay.
Aiming up. And I'm on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook just through my name, Adrian Miranda.
Okay.
I also have a Facebook page, Justice for My Son Joseph, that I've asked people to please visit, to please like, because the more people I get, you know, to see it and to see what's going on, the better it is. And truthfully, you know, when you know, when we look at the reality of life, Pamela, this could happen to any parent.
It could
happen to any parent.
Absolutely.
And I want to give parents hope and to know that, you know, you must never give up. And God will give you the strength. He will give you the strength. He is a just God. He is a loving God. And he is a compassionate God. And I know that he has guided me and given me the strength to write my book, The Scent of My Son and God We Trust, which is in Barnes & Noble, which is on Amazon. And people have told me, Adrienne, I couldn't put your book down. Mm. I couldn't put your book down. And, you know, other people are saying, gosh, Adrienne, is there going to be a sequel? Like, is there going to be a sequel? And I'm saying, well, you know, I really don't know. I'd like to at least get, you know, my aim is first to get, you know,
justice
a court
for your
date.
Son.
Just
yeah.
give me a court date. Just a court date. You know, just you know, my son deserves his day in court. We do. We deserve our day in court. Let a jury decide. Let the facts be presented. But this Elizabeth Embry, like when I tell you about Joseph's phone, like I know Joseph had one of those Sprint like hard metal phones,
uh-huh.
and like the corner of the phone is bent. It's like bent. I mean, and the whole glass front was like shattered. It's because Joseph went so forcefully and hard. It was in his pocket down to the ground.
Mm.
Joseph was also found, you know, on his stomach with his hands at his hips. My son wasn't, he was probably hit so hard,
yeah.
knocked out, not probably, he was knocked out so hard and with such force that he may have been like unconscious going down, because typically you're going to put your hands out to like refrain from hitting the ground.
That's right.
But his hands are at his hips. Do you understand, Pamela, what I'm saying? Don't you?
I absolutely do, Adrienne. And I have to tell you that I'm very appreciative of your taking the time to bring us up to date with what's going on. And certainly I will make sure that all of your contact information, you know, goes out on Mind Talk's Facebook page. And perhaps someone listening will be able to join you in your fight to get justice for your
Pamela.
Son.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Adrienne, for taking the time.
Thank you, Pamela.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank
and you,
you
be
so
safe.
Much.
You be safe. Thank
I
you,
know.
Folks.
God is protecting me.
Okay.
I know that.
Okay.
All right.
And thank you, folks, for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. You can listen to this program at any time by going to mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. Mind Talk is provided daily as an educational public service. The managing producer is Jim Brown, and 26x2 communications assistant to the executive producer is Lede Battle. For more information about Mind Talk, remember, you can go to mindtalk.org. And remember always, if it is unacceptable, that is exactly and precisely what it is. You take care.